I hope I didn't keep you all waiting for too long.
Talking about being on time, and today I'm about 15 minutes late. So, how many of you are practicing Krishna consciousness here? Very good. And how many of you are coming here for the first time? You are coming for the first time? What brings you here?
My friend was here.
Okay. Oh. And how often do you come? This is your second time. So what brings you here for the second time?
I grew up in the temple in Lima, and I haven't been to a temple in a very long time.
Okay. And where? Your parents were in the movement?
Yeah.
Oh. Where? In
Lima, Peru.
Okay. Are they still there?
Yes. Now they live in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you know this place, 26 Second Avenue. Srila Prabhupada started the Krishna consciousness movement here, in this place, in 1966, about 48 years ago. Srila Prabhupada came to New York City in 65, a 70-year-old, at the age of 70, Srila Prabhupada came here. He didn't have any money. He didn't have any patron, any support. The only one address that he had, he wrote to him. It was an Indian young man. He was working in America as an engineer, living in Butler, Pennsylvania. And Srila Prabhupada went there, stayed there for a couple of weeks, and then he came to New York City. Here also the only person he knew was one elderly Indian gentleman, a doctor. And but he, although he was a doctor, but he became a yoga teacher. He had his own ashram called Ananda Ashram, and Prabhupada stayed there for some time. And then he moved into Bowery, sharing a loft with a young American boy called David Allen. And David was quite receptive to Krishna consciousness. He was responding to Srila Prabhupada's teachings very nicely. But unfortunately, David went back to his bad habits of taking drugs, LSD. And one day when he was tripping on LSD, he attacked Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada just came down the stairs, came onto the street, practically destitute in New York. And he called one of his acquaintances, Michael Grant, a young American, and told Michael what happened. And then Michael arranged for Prabhupada to stay with one of his friends for a few days, and in the meantime he actually arranged this place for Srila Prabhupada. This was, his idea was that this could be the place where Prabhupada could gave his teachings, his lectures, and at the back in that house he got an apartment on the first floor for Srila Prabhupada. And that's how it all started. Srila Prabhupada used to give a lecture here in the evening. He used to start off with a Hare Krishna Kirtan. He used to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And probably you remember the young Americans at that time, they also sort of revolted against their ordinary lifestyle, materialistic lifestyle. They saw that money cannot buy everything. Especially money cannot buy love. And they saw that that is what they wanted. In their childhood, they didn't get love from their parents. They grew up in an atmosphere where money was the prevailing factor and love was missing. Therefore, they decided to rather opt for love and leave everything else behind. They started to search for love. And their concept of getting love was from sex and drugs. And it is around that time that Srila Prabhupada came to America, when many young Americans were actually floating around in this area, in New York. They became attracted to Srila Prabhupada. They started to become attracted to Srila Prabhupada because they loved his music. Srila Prabhupada used to go to Tompkins Square Park. Tompkins Square Park is in this direction. Yeah, he used to go there and he used to sit under a tree and he used to chant. And people gathered around him. Srila Prabhupada explained to them what this chant signified. And this is how some young Americans became attracted to him. They used to come in the evening. Srila Prabhupada used to sing Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then Srila Prabhupada used to speak about the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he had imparted that in Bhagavad Gita. That's how it all started. When a few young boys and girls became attracted, they started to come regularly and Prabhupada started to give them the informations about the spiritual reality. Srila Prabhupada made them understand the difference between matter and consciousness. Prabhupada explained to them the difference between inert matter and living entity. What makes us alive? We are in a world of matter. Our bodies are made of matter, and matter is inert. But how come our bodies are conscious? Matter is inert, matter is dead, but our bodies are alive. So what makes our bodies alive? That is how Srila Prabhupada started to enlighten them. And what is the answer to that? What makes this body made of matter alive? The presence of the soul. Now, what is the nature of the soul? Where does the soul come from? Srila Prabhupada started to give them all these informations. The soul is beyond matter. Unlike the gross misconception that is floating in this world today, that the souls are a product of chemical combination, or life comes from some accidental combination of matter under some temperature and pressure. No. Srila Prabhupada very distinctly pointed out that the soul is not a product of this world. Soul comes from another nature. Beyond this material nature, there is another reality, another world, and that is the spiritual world. And we all came from the spiritual world. Then Srila Prabhupada established an institution here. And he named it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It all happened here. The only difference is that at that time Srila Prabhupada was here and he was orchestrating everything. A handful of disciples or followers that Srila Prabhupada had, including the lawyer who was registering the company or registering the society, suggested that it would be a better idea to call it the International Society for God Consciousness, because Krishna consciousness people won't understand. But Prabhupada very strongly protested that concept. And he said, no, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because I have come here to make everyone understand that Krishna is God. People may believe in God, people may speak about God, people may admit themselves, submit themselves to God, but they don't know who He is. There is no information, there is no understanding whatsoever. I have come here to make them understand who He is. And He is Krishna. It is not that Krishna is a Hindu god, and Srila Prabhupada came to establish this Hindu god over the Christian god. No. Prabhupada very clearly pointed out that God is one, without a second. And He is Krishna because this word Krishna signifies all attractive. Just as in Latin you have the concept omnipotent. Who is omnipotent? Who is all-powerful? God. So in this way, omnipotent is the name of God. Similarly, in Sanskrit, Krishna means all-attractive, omni-attractive. That's why He is Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was there before anyone was there. He was the Adi Purusham. the original Supreme Person who actually created everything and from whom everyone came, everything came. He doesn't need any name. But his devotees identify him, call him according to his qualities. They address him according to his qualities, according to his activities. Therefore, one of his qualities, one of his most appealing qualities, one of his most attractive qualities is he's all attractive. That's why he is Krishna. Krishna is a name. And this name is very dear to his devotees because they are naturally attracted to him. Devotees are the ones, those who are attracted to him. So, in this way Prabhupada very simply, in simple words, he started to give them the wisdom of the spiritual reality. Then Srila Prabhupada went to the West. Srila Prabhupada went to, from New York, he went to San Francisco. After establishing this place in 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada went to San Francisco. Because in San Francisco is the place where everything was happening. The youth of America were moving towards San Francisco, especially to Golden Gate Park. The Haight and Ashbury, two roads, was the place where everything was happening, Haight-Ashbury. And next to that, Srila Prabhupada got, Srila Prabhupada's followers, the same Michael Grant. He went there and he got grouped up with some of his other friends and their girlfriends and started, got this place, invited Srila Prabhupada. And Krishna consciousness movement then started to flourish. San Francisco, Los Angeles, Boston, Toronto, Montreal, Ann Arbor, Michigan. So all these places, things started to happen. And then these three couples again, Michael Grant, his wife, now he is initiated. His name is Mukunda Das. Now he is Mukunda Maharaj, a sannyasi, an initiating spiritual master. He made an incredible contribution to this Krishna consciousness movement. His help is remarkable, the way he helped Srila Prabhupada right from the beginning. He is the one who got this place. He is the one who got this place in San Francisco. And things started to happen there. And then, along with his friends, Shyamsundar Prabhu and his wife, Malati Mataji, Guru Das Prabhu and his wife Jamuna Devi Dasi, and Michael Grant, Mukunda Goswami and his ex-wife Janaki Devi, they all went to London. And it started to again flourish there. The most remarkable thing that happened at that time was that George Harrison, the Beatles, he became attracted to Krishna consciousness. And in a way, the Beatles were the most prominent people in that world, in the world at that time. And the Beatles became devotees. And they started to make music on Krishna's glory. So this is how it started to happen, and then within 10 years' time, this Krishna consciousness movement spread all over the world. And the remarkable thing is, generally after the disappearance of the founder of a movement, spiritual movement, it generally disintegrates gradually. And Prabhupada also warned us that after an acharya leaves the planet, there is bound to be crisis. But fortunately enough, although crisis did hit ISKCON after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, but ISKCON did not crumble. ISKCON started to grow. Difficulties had been there. There had been major crises in our movement. Lots of damages had been done. But the movement is growing. To give an example about 38 years ago, when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, we had about 108 temples. Remarkable achievement. Within 10 years' time, Srila Prabhupada established 108 temples. But today, ISKCON has about 550 temples around the world. So what to speak of dwindling and collapsing, the movement actually is growing. And why it is growing? It is growing because Srila Prabhupada designed it in a unique way. Prabhupada's unique designing of the institution is, first thing is, he didn't put himself in the forefront of this movement. He did not establish himself as the personality behind this movement. See the name of this institution? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Krishna Consciousness. This society is designed to promote Krishna's glory. It's a institution for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada didn't put himself as the head of it or as the center of it. Although he was the heart and soul of this movement in a way, but he didn't establish himself in that way. Like those days, many Indian gurus came here in America. I can immediately remember at least half a dozen names. And all these individuals established their institution with them as the main factor. Institution of such and such named after him, them. But that was not the case with ISKCON. Actually, for many, many years, even in India, people didn't know who is the person behind this ISKCON movement or Hare Krishna movement. Like, for example, our world headquarters is in Mayapur. And in Mayapur, they call ISKCON as Sahib Math. The Math of the institution, spiritual institution of the Sahibs, means the whites, gringos. In Vrindavan, it is known as Angrezo Ka Mandir. the temple of the Englishman. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada did not broadcast himself. And even when he was on this planet, Srila Prabhupada made the institution established through a collective form of management. Although Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the movement, but Srila Prabhupada made it very clear that the institution should be run collectively through a governing body. And Srila Prabhupada made himself as one of the members of the governing body with an equal vote, single vote, no veto power. And Srila Prabhupada emphatically told us to maintain that standard of collective management. So this is the unique foresight and the divine arrangement of Srila Prabhupada. Now our society had gone through major crisis. Many of the leaders have defected, fallen down, left. Now see the uniqueness of this arrangement. Say there are 30 man committee called the governing body. Now if one person had difficulty, the 29 other people, the institution may have been affected because of their big position and their big influence and their big followings, but the institution, although faced some difficulty, but did not crumble. Now on the other hand, just consider, if there was one head and if that person had spiritual difficulty, what would have happened? If there was just one person in the head, then the whole structure would have collapsed. Those who are chanting Hare Krishna, don't chant now. Either listen to the class or chant. Either listen to the lecture or listen to the holy name. You can't do two things in 2 years. Just concentrate. Either chant or listen. Don't do two things at a time. So this is how Srila Prabhupada established this movement. We can see the foresight. And it actually happened. During Prabhupada's time, and there were 25 members in the governing body. Out of them, 11 were very, very prominent. They actually became the spiritual head of the institution, you can say. And within 8 years' time, out of these 11, 7 fell down. ISKCON went through massive damage, no doubt. But ISKCON didn't crumble. The institution remained intact. The institution continued. And today we can see that it's becoming stronger and stronger. And what is the purpose of this institution? This institution actually is an educational institution. It is not a religious institution in that way. It is an educational institution. And the purpose of this institution is to educate people with spiritual knowledge. Educational institutions give education, right? Like medical college. What do? They teach them about the science of medicine. Engineering institution, they teach about the science of engineering and so forth. So this institution, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, what is the purpose of this institution? To give you information about the spiritual reality. And what is the spiritual reality? Is it a reality? Is there something called spiritual world or spiritual sky? Spiritual nature? Yes. As I just mentioned, inert matter and living being. We all are living. We the living. Aren't we living entities? And we are actually sustaining this world. Just consider, individually, if none of us were here, would this place be here? Would this world be here? That's the point Krishna actually makes in Bhagavad Gita. That this material nature is composed of 8 elements. How many of you know what are those 8 elements? Very good. Those 8 elements are earth, water, air, earth, water, fire, air, ether. 5 gross elements and 3 subtle elements. Mind, intelligence and false ego. You see, mind also is matter. Intelligence is also matter, subtle matter. And false ego is matter. False ego. In the Western concept, this false ego, there is no concept of false ego. False ego literally means my wrong or mistaken identity. I am the soul, but I am thinking that I am this body. That this concept is due to the influence of a substance. And that substance is called false ego, or in Sanskrit, ahankar. Aham means me, and kar, mistaken concept of me. I'm thinking I'm this body. That's my mistaken concept. So anyway, so these are the 8 elements with which this material nature is composed of. Now, can these 8 elements be manifest by itself, or it needs someone to perceive these elements? Object and subject. I am, therefore I am perceiving this. So who is the observer? Me. So Krishna is pointing out that this me is coming from a superior energy of mind, superior nature of mind, called the spiritual world. So we all came from the spiritual world. And because of us, this material nature became manifest. When we are here, material nature is manifest. When we are not here, the material nature becomes unmanifest. Material nature becomes unmanifest. So this material nature has these 2 stages, 2 states. Manifested stage and unmanifested stage. How does the manifestation take place? Actually, when Mahavishnu, Krishna's expansion, glances towards the material nature, Mahavishnu glances, and as a result of that, the material nature becomes manifest. How? Through Mahavishnu's glance, we, all the living entities, come to this material nature. And it is due to our presence that this material nature becomes manifest. So due to Krishna's glance, the material nature becomes manifest. And when Krishna withdraws his glance, when he withdraws his glance, then all the living entities are also withdrawn. Then no one is there to observe. Material nature is there, but no one is there to observe. Just try to imagine that situation. No one is here to observe. Will this material nature exist at that time? It will exist, but it won't be manifest. No one would be there to witness it. like there is, just we can say, we can consider just one sort of philosophical riddle. In the middle of the Alpine Valley, a beautiful lotus has bloomed, but no one is there to see it. Is that lotus existing or not? What will be your answer? Will it be existing? Since no one is there to witness it, it won't, because no one knows that it is there. So that is the thing, the manifest and unmanifest stage. When living entities are here to witness this activities and affairs of the material nature becomes manifest. And when the living entities are withdrawn, no one is here, the material nature becomes unmanifest. Now beyond this material nature, there is another reality, the spiritual sky, the spiritual world, and we all came from there. Now in this respect, Prabhupada gives an example. A fish. Where does the fish belong to? Water. When the fish is brought to the land, if somehow or other the fish just comes onto the land, what will be the condition of the fish? What will be the condition of the fish? Will the fish be very happy? No. But if some arrangement is made, Mr. Fish will give you a big palace. The fish says, very good idea. He gets a big palace. But then he feels that actually this is not what. Will the fish be satisfied being in a big palace? Then the fish is told that okay, we'll get you a very fast car. The fish gets the fast car. Will the fish be happy? He said, okay, you'll get a Learjet. You'll get this, you'll get that. No matter whatever the fish gets, will the fish be happy? Sure? But now if the fish is taken back to the water, will the fish need the palace, the fast car, and so forth? No, he'll be happy, he'll be jumping with joy. Now just consider, we are all from the spiritual world. And we have somehow or other, we have fallen here, we have come here. Are we happy? No matter whatever we get, does it give us the joy and satisfaction, contentment of the heart? No. Now, just like the fish, if we are taken back to where we came from, will we need any of the things that we are hankering for here? No. So that is the simple understanding. We all are from the spiritual world. Therefore, we should go back to the spiritual sky. And when you go back to the spiritual sky, you will be perfectly happy, you will be perfectly content. Now the question is, how can we go back to the spiritual sky? In order to find out how we can go back to the spiritual sky, we have to find out why we are here. How did we fall here? How did we fall down here? We fell down here. How many of you know the reason of our behind our falling down, this material nature? Okay, tell me.
To enjoy separate from God.
Very good. Who is God?
Krishna.
Okay. Good point. But can you tell me why? You made a very good point. Because we wanted to enjoy away from Krishna, that's why we have fallen here. But why is that? Then why are we suffering?
Like Guru Maharaj
as you only made the point, the this hand is made the food is given, and if you have iron things that...
Yeah, okay, so we'll just go straight to the point. The point is, you see, we all are parts and parcels of Krishna. Now, the utility or the purpose of the existence of the part lies in its connection to the whole, right? Like, this finger is a part of my body. Now, if this finger becomes cut off from the body, will the finger have any value? On the other hand, as long as the finger is connected to the body, how will the finger feel? Its existence has complete meaning, full meaning. So similarly, our existence, the utility or the purpose of our existence lies in our connection with Krishna. Now, how can that connection be established? How do we develop any connection with anybody? Any response to that? How? By serving them, good point. But what is the motivation behind the service?
Satisfying someone,
yes. Love. Doesn't love unite us and separate hatred? Hatred separate us? Now, if we want to become united to Krishna, if we want to become connected to Krishna, what is the force that can make it happen? Love. So, and there is love in everyone's heart. Love, what is actually love? There's another thing that we speak about but don't really know what it actually means. According to the Vedic understanding, love is actually a force that is there with every living entity. Soul has a few things inherent with it. One is consciousness. One is to become joyful. And the third factor that is inherent with the soul is the affinity to love. Wherever there is a soul, there is love. And a soul wants to enjoy, experience joy by offering his love to someone. Doesn't everybody want to be happy by loving somebody? But no matter wherever we offer our love to, this heart never becomes satisfied. Why? Because this love is exclusively meant to be offered to someone. Who is that someone? Krishna. Everybody has love in his heart, and that love is meant to be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when we do that, we establish our relationship with him. We establish our connection with him. We become connected to him. And how many of you have started to love Krishna? Please raise your hand. And how do you feel after doing that? How many of you are feeling happy by doing that? Thank you. So, that is a very simple understanding about our actual purpose of our existence. We have love in our hearts, and it is meant to be offered to Krishna. And when we offer it to Krishna, then we'll become connected to Krishna. And when you become connected to Krishna, then we will become free from this material conditioning and we will go back to our spiritual identity. And Srila Prabhupada came to just give us this very wonderful information and situate us with the absolute knowledge. Once somebody was challenging Srila Prabhupada that this religion and spiritual information is not going to benefit us. We need technological development. An Indian gentleman was telling Prabhupada, we need technology for advancement. And Prabhupada pointed out that that's the difference between you and me. You have come here to beg for something. You have come here to beg the Western technology, thinking that that is going to make you happy. But you can see in the West, they are not happy with the technology. So what makes you think that if you take the technology to India, the Indians will become happy? But I have come here to give them something that nobody has here. That is the spiritual understanding. And when one accepts this process, his life becomes joyful. As we are seeing the result, I'm sure when you raised your hand, I'm sure you meant it. You became happy by loving Krishna. Everybody wants to love somebody, but nobody knows who to love. And Srila Prabhupada came and gave us the very simple understanding, who to actually love. By loving him, our heart will become completely satisfied. And that's what is happening. Just love Krishna, your life will be joyful. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Does anybody have any question? Yes? Very good. Very good question. How can we make a bridge, or how can we make a perfect balance between material life and spiritual life? Very good point. What is material and what is spiritual? Let's first decide that. Can you tell me what is material as opposed to spiritual?
Material would be identifying with one's body.
Okay, very good point. Material is to identify oneself with the body, and spiritual is?
Soul within,
that is spiritual. But there is another very simple understanding of material, definition of material and spiritual. When you put yourself in the center, that is material. When you put Krishna in the center, that is spiritual. That is the distance between material and spiritual. We put ourselves in the center, that's material. When you put Krishna in the center, that's spiritual. Now, it is not actually the activities that are making the difference. It is our attitude. It is our consciousness that's making the difference. Right? Like, you may do the same thing, but if you do it for Krishna, it'll become spiritual. Right? So, say for example, you're cooking. Obviously, you're cooking to eat yourself. But before doing that, if you offer it to Krishna, thinking that you're actually doing it for Krishna, and you're really making it for Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, and Krishna will eat it. And if you cook well, Krishna will be very happy. So you offer it to Krishna, and Krishna accepts it and gives it back. So you see, by transforming our activities into doing it for Krishna or spiritualizing it, we are not losing anything. Materially also we benefit. We simply have to bring this element or understanding that is for Krishna. And then as Krishna's mercy, as Krishna's remnants, we are getting it. But the activity has become spiritualized.
If a material situation doesn't work in your advantage, where you could enjoy your senses accordingly, is that Krishna showing us his mercy? Is that him protecting us?
Yeah, sure. I mean, to get you mean getting fed up with the material way of life.
Actually, like if you want to enjoy something, a sense enjoyment, and it doesn't work in your favor.
It'll never work in your favor to begin with. It's only a matter of time to realize that it's not going to work. Right. Thank you. Where are you from?
Korea.
Okay. And you're here, you live here? In?
Yes, I'm an American citizen, but my heritage is Korea.
Okay, very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for this nice questions. Any other question? Yes?
Whenever I go in the activities of temple, you know, I eat a lot. I mean, prasad is really great. Isn't that sense gratification? And, you know, like, even if it's prasad, but that I try.
Very good point. Another very good point. Your name is, I forgot.
Shashi Shekhar.
Shashi Shekhar, yeah, sorry. Shashi Shekhar. Shashi Shekhar is a student here, yeah, doing his master.
I was a student.
Oh, okay, now you completed your studies.
I'm working here in John.
Oh, okay, very good. Yeah. So, Shashi Shekhar's point is that whenever I go to the temple, I love to take prasad. Now, isn't it sense gratification?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one incident. When I was with Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, serving him, although Prabhupada himself did not eat for months, but one day he sent me to the kitchen, sent me to a devotee, prasadam, and to find out how the prasad was. So I went and I came back and told Prabhupada that Prabhupada, the prasad was not very nice. So Prabhupada called the temple president and he chastised him why the prasad was not nice. And he made it clear that prasad should be very nice. And after he left, after the temple president left, Prabhupada told me, make sure that the devotees get nice prasad. And then he said, that is the only sense gratification they have. So only license that we have for sense gratification is enjoying Krishna prasad. So that is permitted. And it has also been advised that eat prasad up to here. Kantha means neck. So eat it up to the neck. But then what? Then chant Hare Krishna. Akantha puriya karo, prasad shevan, sarvakkhan karo hari naam sankirtan. Eat prasad and chant the holy name of the Lord. Congregation.
I remember once there was feast in Ujjain during Nandotsav. There was a lot of prasadam and then you, I now remember you made this point. Feast of Ujjain.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, everybody wants to enjoy. Who wants to suffer? Krishna consciousness is a source of enjoyment. And therefore it should be executed happily. Susukham kartumam bayam. Krishna consciousness should be executed happily. The only thing is that we don't indulge in wrong activities, because the wrong activities will deviate us from the right course because of the danger. But you know, like taking prasad or indulging in activities that are beneficial to our spiritual progress is always desirable. Like, look at our process. Eating, honoring Krishna prasad, singing, dancing, festival. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it joyful? Like, does one sing when he's unhappy? When does one sing? Naturally singing makes one happy. When does one dance? It has two expresses happiness. So this whole entire process is actually the joyful process. Only thing is that we have to stop the wrong action to be engaged in the right. Thank you, Hare Krishna. How are you? I'm sorry, I'm speaking. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting.
Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, remember my name is sinful.
That's what happens, you know, when you try to remember it, it doesn't come. I'm so happy to see you.
Krishna has protected you all these years.
No.
I have to say, I did mention to somebody that many years, your glories are very well known, but here's one glory they may not know. Many, many years ago, you visited 55th Street Temple, and there was a pizza cooking contest. You were getting